Welcome back to The Rush. It's Teddy Wilson and Richard Krause with you until 6 p.m. Time now for our awesome Smart Speakers panel. We're joined by Toronto Star columnist Bruce Arthur and Reverend Michael Corrin, News Talk 1010 contributor. Welcome, gentlemen.
Pleasure. Pleasure.
So, hello, hello.
First up, how was your eclipse? Did you have a fun eclipse?
Oh, amazing. life-changing. And did I miss it? Oh, no. Yeah, my wife and I stood on our front deck and drank single malt scotch, which was lovely.
Oh.
And it went dark for about 45, 50 seconds. So, yeah, actually sort of a symbol of my life, really. Much was expected. Yeah, not so much achieved.
I think we're related, Michael. What about you, Bruce? Yeah. How was your eclipse?
So here's the thing with an eclipse, and I'm going to be totally earnest here for a second. Before the eclipse, I think a lot of people were saying like, oh, how big a deal is this going to be? Is this going to be overblown, et cetera, et cetera? And for a long time, it kind of was. And even in Toronto, but in a lot of other places where there was cloud cover and it wasn't like exactly the eclipse that you'd want. Afterwards, what you kind of saw was a genuine sort of awe, like an actual awe over the idea of the cosmos being revealed to us in a slightly different way than it ordinarily is. And I think it was actually super great. I am of the opinion, actually, that eclipses in future should be drinking-based holidays. When we have a solar eclipse that we know is going to happen, this should be like St. Patrick's Day. Everyone gets a day off. Grab your lawn chair, sit outside, drink some beers, get your glasses on, watch the eclipse. It becomes communal in a way that we don't have a lot as much anymore. And I love the idea that a lot of people got out, even if it was a little disappointing. They went outside, they got together, and hopefully safely enjoyed an eclipse. Whether or not it was fantastic or not, it still was something that I think left some awe for everybody.
We saw some people on the street. There were some people out of their houses, but it wasn't. I mean, I know what you mean about being communal, and a few families came out, but if you thought that was good, wait until Armageddon. That's going to be amazing. So I strongly recommend you email me privately and we'll talk about it.
And do we have a date for Armageddon, Michael?
Yeah, it's Tuesday week or the first time Tottenham win the league, which will be a long time.
Got it.
Well, it's interesting because I agree with what you say about this sort of monoculture event. We don't get many of these where everyone is aware that the same thing is happening. Even old, indifferent Reverend Michael is standing drinking scotch on his front porch looking at the event. So it is this one thing that kind of touched everybody today. And those are fewer and way further between than they used to be.
You know, when it's oddly enough, I was on CFR, I was on 1010 in those days, hosting a show when we had the big power outage some years ago. And it was incredible how suddenly there was this shared experience, and it was communal. It was virtually universal. And radio played a very prominent part because very few other things, battery operated or whatever. People were listening in. But I do agree with that. There was a time when people read the same newspapers or one or two. They watch the same television. We're now so diversified, not always in the best sense of the word, actually. And it does break down a fabric that we once took for granted.
Doug Ford directs the LCBO to go back to using single-use paper bags. And Brian Lilly in today's Toronto Sun says, bring back the paper bags. It's about time. Bruce, what do you think?
I'm shocked that Brian took that particular position. I will say this. This isn't a new policy, right? This has been going on for several months. And at this point, if you in our society, I sometimes forget bags when I go to the store, you know, and I have to buy a bag and I go, oh, no. And you wind up with a lot of bags. The thing is, if you at this point are not prepared with a bag when you go to the store, I just feel like that's a skill issue. And I don't think that the premier at this point probably should have spent his time going back on a policy that, by the way, the LCBO said would be the equivalent of saving about 188,000 trees every year. So I would have preferred that Doug in his worst moments kind of acts like he's a local councillor. And I feel like this was a local councillor thing, except he actually had the power to make the LCBO listen.
Well, I agree with part of that, but I also think that it's just one of those real populist moves because every time you go to a store now or everything sort of post-pandemic feels like it's a little lesser than. You know, I don't get a bag here. I have to remember my own thing. If I buy more than one bottle of wine, I can't hide it because I forgot to bring a bag with me. And I just think that this is going to resonate with a lot of people. Michael, what do you think?
Oh, I think it's so typical of this government. And I'm not going to go after Brian. I mean, he's still a friend, I think. We've never fallen out, even though we have very different views these days. The LCBO is one of the few places where there is an alternative way to carry what you purchase, because there's always a box you can put something in. Now, obviously, for one bottle of wine, that would be a bit much. We have these archaic laws that are almost only confined to North America, where if you buy alcohol, you have to have it in a bag. Mm-hmm. If you do this in Europe, I mean, nobody would ask you to put alcohol in a bag that you bought in most countries in the world, but we do have that. Maybe that should be scrapped. But no, people do take bags in, and it's routine. And if you don't, well, that's your problem, because we all have to play a part in trying in some way to save the planet. So you go out to your car, generally the car will be parked outside, and you get a bag. This idea that people can't afford to buy a bag, and that's what Ford actually said. You know, people, it's too expensive in these difficult times. Yeah, these are difficult times. Most people have bags in the car. Most people can't afford to buy a bag if they've forgotten one. It's one of these reactionary policies that appear cosmetically to be popular. But I think most people now are thinking beyond the knee-jerk and realize it's not a good move at all.
I want the bags, but I will save the planet by taking the subway to the LCBO and not the car, leaving it parked outside.
I gotta say, though, just to play devil's advocate, we're not talking about Doug Ford asking the LCBO to bring back single-use plastics. He's asking them to bring back paper bags, which are in and of themselves recyclable. And apparently some of these reusable bags that the LCBO is selling at a cost to customers are made of recyclable materials, but are not recyclable in their own right. So I'm all for, you know, measures that help the environment. But does this have any teeth? I mean, what's wrong with using paper bags if they're recyclable? What do you think, Bruce?
Well, I think earlier, like the idea that the thing with papers, yeah, you can recycle it. Not everybody does. And also, we kind of get away with this idea that recycling fixes all our sins. Mm-hmm. And in the case of paper, I mean, we cut down trees for that stuff, man. We don't have a better way to do it.
Yep.
Whereas I believe studies have shown that with reusable bags, whether it's you're comparing it to paper or plastic, the life cycle of those bags is so much longer that even if they're not recyclable at the end, the total use that you get out of those bags is so much bigger and so much, much more energy efficient than anything else you can do. So that would be my argument for them. And as Michael notes, pretty much everyone's got them in their car now anyway.
Exactly. And by the way, recycling is not completely neutral. I mean, it's preferable to what we had before. But the idea that if we recycle, everything is fine isn't true. It's just not as bad as it was. And look, there are so many crises taking place, but the policy that now is taking the headlines is one that is largely irrelevant in the scheme of things. But this is how more and more conservative politicians, conservative parties are behaving. How can we catch a headline rather than solve an issue?
We'll stay with Doug Ford just for a second here. We've only got about a minute. Bruce, I'll go to you. Doug Ford has dubbed Bonnie Crombie the queen of the carbon tax. Does that make him the Don Rickles of politics, or is this just the way it is now? It's a branding tactic that seems to work.
Axe the tax.
Exactly.
Close the door. No, that's not it. What is it? In Canada, what you're noticing, a bunch of CPC MPs put out the same meme today for the eclipse of Pierre Poilievre moving in front of Justin Trudeau.
Yeah.
We're getting dumber, and the politicians are treating us as dumb people. It is very depressing.
We have to leave it here. We'll come back with the smart speakers, Bruce Arthur, Toronto Star columnist, and the Reverend Michael Corrin, News Talk 1010 contributor, on the other side of the break. And we're going to talk a little bit about the federal government now doing more than the fair share on housing. That's what Steve McKinnon, minister, says. And we'll talk about John Burnside revealing that he's been removed from the city's Police Services Board owing to a new provincial rule that keeps former cops from sitting on the board in the same city. Lots to talk about there, lots to break down. We'll do that with the smart speakers when we come back. I'm Richard Krause. That's Teddy Wilson. Stay with us. Lots more to come.
Welcome back to The Rush. It's Teddy Wilson and Richard Krause with you. And we continue now with our smart speakers panel. We're chatting with Toronto Star columnist Bruce Arthur and News Talk 1010 contributor Reverend Michael Corrin. And let's stick with the topic we touched on before the break, and that is Premier Doug Ford's continued and increasing, frankly, use of the nickname Queen of the Carbon Tax. It is what he is calling Liberal leader Bonnie Crombie. Apparently, so far this year alone in the legislature, the premier or his ministers and MPs have used the term 45 times, Queen of the Carbon Tax, to refer to Bonnie Crombie, and even more so if you count press conferences. So what do we think about this? Michael, I'll go to you. Is this a smear? Is it lowest common denominator politics? Or is the use of this sort of nickname fair game in politics?
Well, I used to work at Sun News a few years ago, and a number of people who worked with me went on to work for Mr. Ford in this government. And I can guarantee you that they've sat down and they've come up with a few ideas, a few phrases, a few terms for him to throw around. And this would have been one of them. And they're urging him to do it repeatedly because it probably does work. I'd like to say it doesn't, but it probably does. Mm-hmm. If you repeat a lie often enough, well, you know the rest of it. And so they've got something which is belittling, it's insulting, it's grim politics, but it probably is relatively effective. Do people really understand what the carbon tax is? I mean, that's debatable. But if you keep saying about a politician, they are about taxes. They want to increase taxes. They're in favor of a tax that you don't want. Yes, it does work, I'm afraid, and I think you'll hear more of it.
Yeah, and you know, Bruce touched upon this in his answer before the break. You know, he mentioned Axe the Tax and other political slogans we're seeing right now. But, you know, those aren't directed at a person. Queen of the Carbon Tax is specifically about a person. To me, it's got a bit of a kind of puerile schoolyard bully quality to it. Do you agree? And do you think we should expect more from our leaders in terms of decorum? Or is this just part of politics? What do you think, Bruce?
Well, that's actually, your description there is exactly right. And not that Doug Ford is Donald Trump, because nobody is. Wally Ever isn't. Nobody in Canada is. Trump does this. This is Trumpian politics. Trump workshops insults and nicknames for his opponents, right? Like Little Marco for Marco Rubio. Lion Ted Cruz or whatever. Like, but what it is it is bargain basement grade school to early high school politics. And it's just kind of lazy and dumb. But the impetus, the real kind of responsibility is on us as voters to think a little harder than that, right? That's what you kind of need to do, is be more informed, have a better idea as to why they're doing this. Like what Michael said is true. The carbon tax as an idea, when Doug Ford talks about it, he ignores the fact that the rebates exist. A lot of politicians do that. And it's BS. It's not how the carbon tax works. And we as voters should have a better understanding of that. And that, to me, is kind of the big part problem with this, is when politicians treat you like you're stupid, you shouldn't buy into it.
We're doing the Smart Speaker segment right now. This is Bruce MacArthur, Toronto Star columnist, joined by Reverend Michael Corrin, News Talk 1010 contributor. Michael, Government House Leader Stephen McKinnon says the federal government is now doing more than our fair share when it comes to addressing the housing crisis in Canada, but a number of premiers are pushing back against the latest housing announcements because much of the money comes with conditions and benchmarks that the provinces must meet, and they say it's overreach by the federal government. What do you think?
I think that after years of doing very little, the federal government realizes that one of the major issues in the coming election will be housing. A lot of younger people in particular, who are fairly liberal in their politics, are reluctant to vote for a party, for a government that has done nothing for them. Young people who want to start a family and buy a home. And this idea, our fair share, I find that really very irritating language for a politician to use. What do you mean their fair share? We have a housing crisis and the government has done very little. Some provinces have done better than others, but the federal government is the federal government. They have to take the lead. They have to show initiative. They have more money than most. They can bring in experts whenever they want it. And there hasn't been a cogent, deliberate policy to try and build affordable or even semi-affordable housing. So the government is complaining because the provinces are pushing back. No one can hold their heads up high on this subject and say we've done the right thing. They haven't. Look, it's not easy. You've got to get involved in the free market and make it slightly less free. You've got to make sure that affordable housing is built. You've got to say to developers, if you want to make a lot of money and develop housing, you also have to give us more than you are in terms of affordable housing. The government's been reluctant to do that. I don't think it's changed radically even now.
Bruce, what do you think about this claim by the federal government, or at least their messaging that they're doing their fair share on housing?
Well, I would say this. The dirty secret of the housing crisis is that no government is going to solve the housing crisis, not anytime soon, because the problem is bigger than government. Like when they sit down in government offices in the federal government or in the provincial government, say, what kind of money could we throw at building affordable housing? And they put all the money that they have in a pot. It probably doesn't add up to one mid-sized developer, one, right? And there's thousands. The market is too big. The deficit is too large. We have, this was a long fuse dating a long ways back in which government got out of building social housing and our rate of building was constantly falling behind our rate of population. And then the rate of population went a little higher and it blew the wheels off the thing. So I would say this, what the federal government has done is made it look like they are actually doing something on housing. So the Housing Accelerator Fund, the Canada Housing Infrastructure Fund, the Apartment Construction Loan Program, top up, like stuff like that. They have started to actually move things. They have tried to do the rezoning, push the rezoning aspect, which you have to do if you're going to try to really build quickly and within the confines of a city. The fact that the provinces aren't on board is a problem, and it's something that I'm not sure the federal government can bridge. But I do think there's something to be said here in that, remember back in August when Justin Trudeau said, this isn't really our responsibility, because it's not, right? The provinces are and municipalities are much more involved in housing than the federal government. The federal government has pulled a bunch of the levers that they can pull. So now, if the provinces don't do anything, and Doug Ford's resistance to fourplexes is one of the most baffling, stupid things I've ever seen in politics, it's amazing. It's going to bite him in the butt. This is kind of what they can do right now, because also they don't have an endless amount of money to spend, the feds, because right now they're in a serious deficit situation.
All right. We just have about a minute left for our last topic, so we got to be quick on it. But the issue is City Councilor John Burnside. He was on More in the Morning earlier today. He reveals that he's been removed from the city's police services board. This is because of a new provincial rule that keeps former cops from sitting on the board in the city in which they were a police officer. The councilor, though, hasn't been a cop for about 20 years. What do you think of this, Bruce?
I think you're still too close to what you were if you're on that board. That board does not need police representation. It needs a more independent view of police. And I think in this case, I don't have a problem with him not being on.
And what about you, Michael? I mean, 20 years is a long time, though. Have they missed the mark on this in terms of not having a timestamp on this legislation?
No, there shouldn't be a timestamp at all. Look, there are lots of committees, there are lots of councils, lots of work to be done. Go on another committee. This is meant to be a conduit, a bridge, if you like, between elected politicians and the police. Mm. The police carry guns and have all sorts of power and authority. So it should be as neutral and objective as possible. No police officer, I don't care how long ago they served, they shouldn't be on it. It's hardly a big price to pay. And it does, I believe, make people, make voters, make citizens feel just slightly more represented than they would otherwise have been.
That was the Smart Speakers, Bruce Arthur from the Toronto Star, Reverend Michael Corn, News Talk 1010 contributor. When we come back, we're going to talk about the Jays home opener and I think probably finally get a decision from Teddy as to whether or not he's going. You're listening to Richard Krause and Teddy Wilson on The Rush. Stay with me.